20 years ago today, President Ronald Reagan stood at the Brandenburg Gate in what was then West Berlin in West Germany and spoke these now famous words.
There is one sign the Soviets can make that would be unmistakable, that would advance dramatically the cause of freedom and peace. General Secretary Gorbachev, if you seek peace, if you seek prosperity for the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe, if you seek liberalization, come here to this gate. Mr. Gorbachev, open this gate. Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
That Berlin Wall speech is remembered as one of the high points of the Reagan presidency, but views differ on its true significance. In an op-ed in this past Sunday's New York Times, writer James Mann describes two views that have emerged over the years and says they're both wrong. In a couple of moments, we'll talk with him and with the man who wrote that famous line. If you have questions about how that speech came to be and about its subsequent impact, give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also go to our blog, npr.org/blogofthenation. But first, James Mann, author in residence at the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies, joins us here in Studio 3A. Nice to have you back on the program, James.
Good to be with you.
What are the two myths, as you call them?
Well, one of them is what I call the triumphal interpretation of the speech that Reagan delivered these words and the Soviet Union responded.
Mm-hmm. And by crumbling.
Right. And the other, which I call the theater interpretation of the speech, is that it was just a stunt, that it had really no connection to the end of the Cold War.
Hmm. And why do you think they're both wrong?
Well, on the triumphal interpretation, one needs to look a little bit more carefully at the context of the speech. The end of the Cold War was brought about not just Reagan's invocation of moral values and the importance of freedom, which was itself extraordinarily important, but also by his diplomacy in the last years of his administration. And it was that diplomacy that helped set the context in which Gorbachev and the Soviet Union decided not to intervene in 1989. As the wall was coming down. So that's the limits of the triumphal interpretation. The theater interpretation, I think, misses the fact that, first of all, the speech was meant to create support in the United States, public support for Reagan's diplomacy with the Soviet Union, and also misses this aspect of the invocation of the values of freedom.
Mm-hmm. Which is not to suggest you think the collapse of communism was due entirely to Western efforts. There were some internal contradictions there as well.
Precisely, and that's where the diplomacy counted. Absolutely.
Indeed. Let's join now Peter Robinson, who wrote that speech. He's in the studios of Stanford University, where he's a research fellow at the Hoover Institution. And Peter, nice to talk with you again.
Neil, good to talk to you.
And when you wrote the Berlin Wall speech 20 years ago, when you were, if I might add, 30 years old, what did you have in mind? What was the purpose of that wonderful line?
Well, the purpose, so to the question of intent is a little bit of a puzzling one here. I just want to back up a little bit because James, who is a good and careful historian and a wonderful writer, and everyone should know that this piece in the New York Times was a little glimpse of a book he's working on.
Uh-huh.
But I think, Jim, you stepped on a little bit of a logical banana peel, confusing effect with intent. That is to say, the effect of the speech was, just as you say, to help the president set up the space for the president's subsequent negotiations. But Ronald Reagan's mind was not a calculating machine. It was, above all, a moral imagination. And so to suggest that he engaged in close calculations, or I, as his speechwriter, engaged in close diplomatic calculations in working on the speech, I think gets Ronald Reagan wrong. To the extent that I had diplomacy in mind, it was pretty simple. Gorbachev was now talking about glasnost and perestroika. There had been no formal response, certainly no response by the president of the United States to these new initiatives. And so the speech set up a test. Is this real? Are these the beginnings, as this text read, are these the beginnings of profound changes in the Soviet state or token gestures intended to raise false hopes in the West?
Mm-hmm.
There's one sign the Soviets can make that would be unmistakable. So it set up a test. But at the ground of it all was that when I went to Berlin to do research, I saw the site where the president would speak. I talked to West Berliners. The weight of the wall, the affront to human dignity, I knew he was going to want to respond in a powerful way. So really the speech arose from the kind of moral grounding of the entire conflict as Ronald Reagan saw it. It was a moral statement first and foremost.
Jim Mann?
Well, I agree that the importance of the speech was setting up a test. Reagan had actually said before in different words that the wall should come down. In fact,
he'd said it in Berlin.
He'd said that the wall should come down. He'd also said on the 25th anniversary of the construction of the wall, which was in 86, he thought the wall should be dismantled. As Peter says, what counted was setting up this test of Glasnost for Gorbachev. How would the U.S. view Glasnost? And one test would be what happened to the wall.
As you also wrote in your piece, and I found this part fascinating, he personalized it. It was not Soviet Union tear down this wall. Mr. Gorbachev tear down this wall.
Precisely. And I think the one part that where I – it's not that I disagree with Peter. I think that the speech was one facet of Reagan's policies towards the Soviet Union. And so one needs to look at the speech – and the overall diplomacy, both. It's not that diplomacy was the intent of the speech, but it was part of a package.
True enough. Neil, you should know that Jim and I are friends, and we've talked about this speech over and over again over the years. I've learned so we're not going to arm wrestle over it. We're attempting to fine-tune each other's opinions
here.
Maybe
a food fight would erupt.
But the other aspect I agree with Jim's overall point there entirely. Mm-hmm. Ronald Reagan, the critical aspect of Ronald Reagan's pre-presidential experience to bear in mind is not his acting, although that was important. It's his presidency of the Screen Actors Guild. He was a union boss, in effect, and he knew how to do two things that union leaders must know how to do. State your claim, that's where speeches came in, and then cut a deal. And that's where the negotiations and the diplomacy came in. And he was always working both at the same time. But what was not negotiable and what was in him always just remarkably close to the surface, what was not negotiable was the moral ground of this great conflict of the Cold War.
Hmm. Interestingly, I wanted to ask about that decision, though, to personalize it. It would have been hard to imagine Ronald Reagan saying, Mr. Chernenko, tear down this wall.
True enough. Well, by then, of course, he'd met Gorbachev in Geneva in 1985. Correct me, Jim. Now, 1986, right?
Geneva was 1985. 85. Yeah.
85.
Geneva's
yes.
85, and then Reykjavik is 86. I'm sure that Jim will touch on this in his book because Jim has researched everything. But Mrs. Thatcher is also encouraging Ronald Reagan to view Gorbachev as somebody to remember before. It's the year before Gorbachev becomes general secretary. He's the youngest member of the Politburo. He pays a visit to Great Britain, spends 4 hours with Mrs. Thatcher talking at Chequers, the prime minister's country retreat.
And she
Mrs.
says,
Thatcher
this,
emerges.
This is
exactly,
a man we
go
can
ahead.
Do business with.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
She didn't look into his soul, though. But that's enough.
No, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. So Reagan, and indeed I can recall, there was a moment, I've told this to Jim, Don Regan, then chief of staff, this is after Reykjavik, I think, calls in the speechwriters and says, the president wants you to go a little easier on Gorbachev. And we said, in effect, sure he does. You're the one who wants us to go easier on Gorbachev. So Don Regan, God bless him, he was not the best chief of staff, but I always liked the guy and he was honest. And he just trotted us down to the Oval Office. And lo and behold, Ronald Reagan did want us to go a little easier on Gorbachev. Reagan, we all walked out as if the universe had turned upside down. We thought, Ronald Reagan, soft on communism? But Jim is absolutely right that Reagan early on senses that Gorbachev is someone quite different. George Shultz understands this. They're feeling their way toward how far do we push him? How much space do we give him? How do we handle all of this? With Reagan, though, that moral ground was never negotiable. He was never willing to give on that.
Hmm. Let's see if we can get some listeners involved in this conversation. We're talking with former Ronald Reagan speechwriter Peter Robinson and also with us James Mann, author in residence at the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies, who wrote an op-ed in this past Sunday's New York Times called Tear Down That Myth. And let's see if we can talk with Tony. Tony with us from Geneseo, in New York.
I just got back from Berlin, and I went to the Berlin Wall Museum, and I saw Robert Kennedy, pictures of Robert Kennedy, pictures of John Kennedy, even pictures of Johnson. And I specifically looked for any reference to Reagan, and I didn't see any. So I guess the Germans or the East Germans or the West Germans or the West Berliners don't think that that speech was that important, at least not important enough to put in their museum.
Jim Mann?
Well, that's fascinating to hear. I actually spent a few months in Berlin as I was reporting this book, and I found that the Germans are just still, in funny ways, uncomfortable with this speech. At the time it was given, they were uncomfortable, and in some ways they still are.
Why?
Mm-hmm. Well, at the time, they were there was a separate dynamic that had little to do with the United States and the Soviet Union between the two Germanys. They were trying to work out an accommodation. They were really eager to get their idea of getting past the Cold War was to just in some ways accept the presence of the wall. And I had leading German officials of the time say, you know, we were ready to accept the wall as an enduring presence.
That's interesting. Peter Robinson, it's given Ronald Reagan's history, that was one thing that he would not be willing to leave alone.
No, that's true. That's true. He would not have been willing to accept that as a permanent presence, certainly. My own view on the German response to this is that it's very hard to revisit this moment in history, like much of German history since the war, because decisions about what would happen in Germany were made every morning in Moscow and Washington. And here you have a president of the United States standing in your capital, your former capital city, Berlin, talking to the General Secretary of the Soviet Union about the disposition of German freedom. It's extremely difficult. My own view is that if Reagan were alive today on this 20th anniversary, what he would be thrilled about. I like, by the way, what Jim talks about. Jim uses the phrase the relaxed climate, the sort of space that permitted the Soviets not to to sit on their hands when the wall came down.
Mm-hmm.
The people who took the wall down, and I think that Reagan would have said what we did was create this, what we Americans did was create the space, standing up to the Soviets, letting them know that there would be limits to what we would permit them to do, but it was the German people who took down the Berlin Wall. Germans are, I believe, because of the horrible weight of their history and their powerlessness through much of the post-Cold War period, they very rightly want to hear their own role in the final weeks celebrated. I'm convinced that Ronald Reagan would have done just exactly that.
Tony, thanks very much for the call. We're talking with James Mann and Peter Robinson about the speech 20 years ago today, Mr. Gorbachev, Tear Down This Wall. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we can get another caller on the line. And this is Brad. Brad's with us from Portland, Oregon.
Neil, hi.
How you doing, Brad?
Well, excellent. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I had the opportunity to be in Berlin in 1989 and actually got to walk on the wall right there at the Brandenburg Gate. I found it quite interesting. My question is Reagan went from calling them the evil empire to, you know, getting, you know, saying tear down the wall. Do you think that's what made it happen, or was it just the impetus that was already in place? And I'll take my answer offline, and thank you so much for taking my call.
Okay, Brad, thanks very much. Well, Jim Mann, you were already saying that there was a duality here. He was making rhetorical statements, of course, moral positions. At the same time, he was also making a deal.
He was trying to work out an accommodation. I don't know if I wouldn't go so far as a deal, but a working accommodation relationship, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the same people he called the evil empire, he could go into a meeting with
right.
Mikhail Gorbachev
and
come to an agreement.
You know, if you even go back to the, I would call the peak period of tensions in the Reagan administration, 1983, and mm-hmm. even then, people within the Reagan White House were finding that as he was building up the defense budget and proceeding with the Strategic Defense Initiative, he was also warning people, I don't want to rule out any kind of effort to talk to or create a dialogue
Precisely.
With the Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm. Precisely. George Shultz mentioned, we were talking, George Shultz is a colleague of mine at the Hoover, excuse me, I'm a colleague of his at the Hoover Institution. And we were talking about this the other day. You remember, Jim, when the KAL 007, the Korean airliner, was shot down by the Soviets. And there was a moment when, if Reagan really were the crude anti-communist that some people thought he was, he would have broken off relations. And in fact, Shultz had a pre-scheduled meeting with the Soviets, and Reagan insisted that he go ahead and hold that meeting. He would not permit relations to get shut down or cut off during that moment of terrible tension.
Mm-hmm.
He insisted on talking.
Peter, I know you got a chance to talk with the president after he left office. In retrospect, what did he think of that moment at the Brandenburg Gate now 20 years ago?
You know, Ronald Reagan was always coolly professional about his work. He was not, he could get misty-eyed and feel very deeply about America, but about any one of his own actions, he wasn't going to boast or dwell on it. So I was struck that in his... in the diaries that were just published, what was it, week before last, the way he writes about it, it's typical Reagan. My crowd was several tens of thousands. I was interrupted 28 times by applause. Boom. That's all he says about this speech.
And when
that's typical Reagan. It's just there's a kind of cool objectiveness about it. And when it came up in conversation between him and me, after he had left the presidency, there was someone else in the room who said, well, you remember Peter wrote that speech. And Reagan just turned to me and said, well, why, thank you. I was very eloquent in Berlin. And then we moved on to the next topic. That was it.
Peter Robinson, thanks very much for your time, as always.
Neil, a pleasure.
Peter Robinson, research fellow at the Hoover Institution at Stanford. His latest book is How Ronald Reagan Changed My Life. He joined us from the studios at Stanford University. James Mann with us here in Studio 3A. Good luck with your book. When is it coming out?
It'll still be a while.
Some editors have to go
yes.
through it. Okay. Jim Mann is an author in residence at the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies. Joined us here in the studio. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.